Open Zone. Tom is the CEO of the Community Associations Institute that is based right here in Northern Virginia. Thank you so much for joining us today, Tom.
Thank you, Shu.
You just told me, I didn't realize you've been there for 2.5 years. So
yeah, it's been...
WEBR, Fairfax Radio, you're on the Commons. I'm Shu Bartholomew, and joining me on the Commons today is Tom Skiba.
It's been almost 2.5 years, I guess, this month, and it's been an amazingly fast time.
Well, I was going to say, I thought I'd be able to beat you up, but you've been around long enough to know what you're talking about.
I can't claim being a new guy on the block anymore.
Oh, shucks, and I thought I was going to try that. You were a consultant with KPMG beforehand?
Correct. I spent 16 years working with KPMG in their consulting division, working primarily with both state and local governments and not-for-profit organizations around the country.
And why did you choose to come to take care of homeowner associations?
Well, you know, after you're a consultant for a long time, you've spent a good part of your professional life telling people how to do their job and how to run their organizations, and you eventually get to the point where you feel like you want the opportunity to do it yourself, and CAI was an opportunity that came along that seemed to be an organization and an industry in a tremendous amount of change and with tremendous opportunities, and it was a real challenge presented to me.
Any regrets?
Really none at all. I think it's been a great challenge, a great opportunity, and more importantly, a great learning experience for me, a whole new industry for me to learn about. Wonderful people both within CAI and all the organizations we deal with that I've had the opportunity to meet and learn from as well.
And so you've had a chance to get up and running, and you're well-versed in that. You know, one of the reasons you're here today, I mean, apart from coming in, and I'm always pleased to have you here with me, one of the reasons that I wanted you especially here is because, as you know, there's been a lot of attempted legislation throughout the country to do something about foreclosures, and we're going to concentrate on foreclosures, especially during the first half of the show. But there was a veto recently. I mean, a bill that would have sort of curtailed some of the powers that associations have. CAI actually went out and lobbied very strongly and very hard to prevent it from passing. So there's nothing out there to protect the homeowners.
Well, I'm not sure I agree with that. I think, in fact, the bill you're referring to in California has some of the strongest consumer protection laws in place. In fact, just 2 years ago, the California legislature passed AB 2289, which created requirements for community associations to expand the notification, the information requirements before they get to a lien and foreclosure situation, and in fact mandates that the association meet with individuals who are behind in their assessments. So there are consumer protections there. I think the issue that we had with this particular bill really didn't revolve around the consumer protection provisions. It revolved around the way that the bill was crafted and the potential serious negative impacts it might have on both associations, individual homeowners, and frankly, business in the state of California.
One thing, I guess the Radcliffe situation basically got everybody very upset.
Mm-hmm.
All of these consumer protections that you just mentioned mm-hmm. did not do a whole lot to protect or help the Radcliffe.
Well, I can't speak to the specific facts of that case, because I don't know them any better than anyone else who reads the newspapers does. I do know, though, that the bill that was in place, if in fact those provisions weren't followed, that's a serious issue for the association to deal with, and in fact would have been a way for the Radcliffes to address the potential foreclosure of their home. They didn't do that. I assume it was a result because of the fact that those protections and those steps were taken by the association in accordance with 2289.
Okay. Well, I did interview their mm-hmm. attorney. Mick McComber came on here, and we talked about it, and we talked about all of mm-hmm. the issues surrounding mm-hmm. the actual foreclosure. And the way I understood it to happen was that, yes, they did get behind.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, they did owe money.
Mm-hmm.
and they had both been ill. They were elderly.
Mm-hmm.
And they got noticed. They got notified that there would be a foreclosure, and they were told pay so much or else. Mm-hmm. So they did. They went, and she borrowed the money,
mm-hmm.
and she took a check for the full amount that she was told they owed the association. She dropped it off at the association office. She thought she had done what she was supposed to do. It was somewhere around, you know, several thousand dollars, because the $120 annual, that's $10 a month. Let's face it. I mean, if you're going to go bankrupt over $10 a month, there's a serious problem, and it's not having one homeowner being delinquent. The $10, the $120 plus hundreds and thousands of dollars in legal fees and all of that, took the check to the office. The office said thank you very much, put it in an envelope, sent it to their collection agent, who happened to be in an, you know, not in the immediate area. By the time they got the check, they said, oh, we've just added another $1.50 in late fees, in penalties, basically. So we're going to refuse to accept this check, and we're going to foreclose. They refused to accept a check for everything. I mean, the entire enchilada except for $1.50. And by refusing to make sure that this doesn't happen, Tom, it kind of comes across like you're condoning this kind of behavior.
Absolutely not. I think the first thing I want to say is foreclosure should always be the last resort for any association under any circumstances, and certainly that's what we teach in our training courses for association board members. It's what we stress with our professionals. It's what we talk about constantly with our attorney members. So there's no question that it is the choice that you get to last and least. But that doesn't change the fact that mistakes happen, that people make errors. And if an error was made in this case, and I don't know whether it was or not, and certainly the way you describe it would lead you to want to think that, then you need to rectify the error. There are 260,000 associations in the United States. There are 1.25 million people serving on their boards. There are 50 million homeowners. Perfection's, my mom always told me, you know, you strive for perfection, but it's not a possible thing. You do your best. Does that mean people make mistakes? Of course they do. Does that mean they made a mistake in this circumstance? They may have. I don't know. And I don't have all the details that you do, and I haven't had a chance to talk to the parties. The issue, it seems to me, is how do we equip boards to make smart decisions? How do we have informed homeowners? Because you said at the opening, one of the issues that folks sometimes don't understand is that when they sign a contract to buy a home in a community association, they're entering into not just a home purchase, but into a long-term contract with the association. They need to understand that. That's all about education, and that's really what CAI is all about in terms of training homeowners, providing them resource materials, training boards to provide them with resources so they can do their job effectively, to setting professional standards for managers and attorneys and a wide variety of other professionals. That's the key to me to avoid these kinds of problems. Not simply saying you can't do this or you can't do that, but equipping people to make smart decisions, providing communication channels so that if there is a problem, we're aware of it and we know how to fix it, and then working through a system where people are not individuals within a community, but in fact they come together as a community and they share the not only the responsibilities, but frankly the benefits that come with it.
What did you do in this case? I mean, frankly,
what did we do in the
Radcliffe case? Just about every legislator voted for some kinds mm-hmm. of reforms. CAI opposed all reforms. You're even quoted in a press release as saying that we faced an uphill struggle on an issue of critical importance to our members. You also went on to say that you know, you're speaking for millions of Californians when you mm-hmm. thanked Schwarzenegger. I mean, you did say that, or?
I did say that, absolutely, because there's two issues here, one of which is the specific case of the Radcliffes, and the second, which is what I was commenting on in that press release, is the issue surrounding the implications that this bill would have had. And the bill had such serious implications for the financial health of associations, frankly, for the financial well-being of the individual homeowners who do pay their assessments, who are the ones who are going to foot the bill for this, and for business in California, not only the real estate market, but the broader marketplace.
I don't even understand the reference to building in business in California, but okay. We'll come back to that because okay. I want to know what, you know, you have this situation.
Mm-hmm.
CAI has been around for 30-odd years. It started off, you know, as a means of educating people, and yet we see stories like this all the time.
Well,
and what have you done? I mean, education was the number one goal. We're going to educate people because they don't know how to live in these things. And so we're going to form an organization. We're going to call it the Community Associations Institute, and we're going to foster a sense mm-hmm. of community. And yet we're doing this sort of thing. An elderly couple loses everything they've ever had, everything they've spent their entire lives building up for $1.50.
Well, I think it's a very unfortunate circumstance. I don't disagree with you, Shu. I think that the answer to your question, though, is we have done a lot to educate folks. Unfortunately, this industry has grown so quickly. It has grown so dramatically. In 1973, when CAI was created, there were approximately 10,000 community associations in the United States. You happen to live in one of the larger ones that dates back that far. Today, there are 260,000 associations. 30 years ago, we probably had about 50,000 individuals on their boards. Now we have 1.25 million. Have we kept up with it? Absolutely not. We can't, you know, we can't train people fast enough. We can't possibly. And one of the things that I came to CAI to do was to evolve our organization to make it more responsive, to make it more effective, to provide a broader set of training tools. For example, last year we put together a training program called Introduction to Community Association Living, and it's about a 30-page self-paced primer, if you will, for folks who've never lived in a community common interest development before. So you, first-time condo owners, first-time homeowners association owners, how is this different than if you lived in an apartment or if you lived in a single-family detached home that wasn't in an association?
What kind of information is on there?
It talks about the contract you have with your association that's described in the CCNRs. It talks about what your role as a homeowner is, both as an individual homeowner and as potentially and hopefully in many cases someone who takes a leadership role eventually in their community. It talks about what the association is obligated to do for you in terms of services, but also in terms of keeping you informed. It talks about communication methods. It talks about being involved. And to me, that's one of the big things that all associations struggle with. It's easy to get folks to react if there's a problem, but getting people involved and engaged, whether it's sitting on their board or being on a committee or even just getting involved in a neighborhood event, is sometimes the hardest thing. And the more we can get people involved, the more we can foster communication, the more we can foster a common understanding of what the issues are, frankly, the less likely we have situations like we had in California.
Well, that's not just the one in California. We're getting that sort of stuff all over the country.
It certainly happens, like I said.
And I want to know what you're going to do about it. I mean,
well, I think we're going to work on, as we said with Governor Schwarzenegger, we're going to work on with all of the parties to come up with a bill that provides appropriate consumer protections in California, that provides folks with the mechanisms so that they have ways to deal with a situation where they're behind in their assessments, yet also protects the innocent, if you will, the other homeowners in the association who otherwise footing the bill for someone who doesn't pay their assessments, and at the same time doesn't damage the fiscal viability of the association at the same time.
Have you got a model? Have you done anything?
We actually have a working group put together that involves our California Legislative Action Committee. We're working with a number of other organizations in California, including the bankers, including the Executive Council of Homeowners in Sacramento, the California Association of Community Managers, and a variety of others trying to lay out what are reasonable, fair, and equitable solutions to this that protect all the parties and, frankly, give everyone a chance to sort of take a deep breath and step back before you finally get to the point of saying, hey, we have to foreclose on somebody. Let me give you an example. Here in Virginia, if there's a foreclosure, there's a law that allows a right of redemption. So even if the house has gone to sale, the homeowner in Virginia, I think it's 30 days, it may be 60 in Virginia, but I'm not sure, but it's, I think it's 30 days. 30 days after that happens, the homeowner can come back and say, you know what, I can pay my bill, I get my house back.
But in the meantime, we're going to ruin your life.
No, in the meantime, you go. You file for right of redemption, and you don't have to do anything. If California doesn't have that provision right now, we think that's something that's appropriate to have, and provide that final safeguard for a homeowner who, for whatever reason, but more importantly, the vast majority of situations that we find don't get to this point. All right, when we surveyed our members in California and looked at the number of collection efforts that went to a lien, and then looked at the number that actually went to foreclosure, something around 7 out of 1,000 actually went to a foreclosure process. And of those, a tiny fraction were the house was actually sold. In most cases, as soon as you move in that direction, the homeowner makes good on their debt, and it's over.
So it's, you're basically holding a gun to their head.
I don't believe that's the case at all. I wouldn't agree with that.
I think so. I think that, as I told you before we went on the air, I think that the only protection that you can give a homeowner is no foreclosure at all. That homeowners association can collect their debts just the same way as any other debtor can, or creditor can. And I just don't think that you need to be able to put old women out. It may be your mother next year, Tom, you know, and it may be your kids one day. It may be your best friend's kids, you know. And you've got to think about it. It's not some nameless person who's out there who, gosh, they must have done something wrong. And for $120 a year, $10 a month, I mean, you know, the whole association's going to come crashing down around their ears. Hey, is that really much of an investment if we're going to be stuck on something like that?
I don't disagree with you that there needs to be protections. That's not the point. And I don't disagree that this should be the last resort. I would argue, and I think most of the folks in the industry who do this would argue, you need a mechanism to collect. In most states, this is the mechanism that exists because others don't work. And the other part of this that really bothers me, I guess, is the sense that there's an equity issue here. But the equity issue, I don't think, is solely one-sided. Everyone looks at this and says, well, this person didn't pay their bill, but we should find a mechanism to excuse that, if you will, or at least cover, you know, find them a way to defer that payment. That's fine and that's fair. But keep in mind, the people who are paying the bill for that are the other members of the association who are paying their assessments on a regular basis, who are keeping up their homes, and who are supporting the association. Essentially, if you choose not to pay your bill, you're taking out a loan on your neighbors without their permission. And that's the serious inequity that bothers me a lot. So not only do you have to protect the person who is behind in their assessments, but there's got to be a protection for the folks who live next door to them who pay their bills and who don't necessarily want to be paying for their neighbors.
I absolutely do not disagree with you, Tom. I think that if you live in an association, you owe the money. No ifs, ands, or buts. I have said that repeatedly on the show. It's on my webpage. If you live in an association, you owe the money. No ifs, ands, or buts. However, I have something here that says it's all about CAI, and CAI has it's the only national organization dedicated to fostering vibrant, responsive, competent community associations. And I would suggest that when you have to be, you know, foreclosing on people, that you're not going to foster any sense of community. I mean, does the name Winona Blevins ring a bell?
Certainly does.
What happened in that case?
If I recall the facts, and this is prior to my arrival at CAI by a year and a half or so, Ms. Blevins was a widow living in outside Houston, Texas, who was foreclosed upon by her association. In fact, that was a judicial foreclosure. She had a day in court. She did not prevail. Yes, it was a judicial foreclosure. She did not prevail. It was picked up by the media after the fact, and ultimately her house home was returned to her.
Well, actually, the house was returned to her, but what happened to the neighbors?
Excuse me? The neighbors ended up footing a lot of the bill.
That's right.
That's right.
The bill was...
Both for her assessments and all the costs associated with it.
No, she had dropped off a check for her assessments. You see, here's an elderly lady who's a widow, and she lives in her association. Nobody stopped by. I mean, she's lived there for 15 years. She's made her assessment payments every year. Not a problem. I mean, she's not a habitual delinquent. She gets a bill the following year for 2 years' worth. She says, oh, you know, she was in the hospital. So she writes a check for the full amount again, Tom, and she drops it off at the association. She thought it was all over with. It's a done deal. She's paid what she was told she owed. They refused the check again, Tom. They refused the check. By the time everything was settled, the homeowners, her neighbors, were really upset with the board. They did not want this. They did not like the bad publicity. They did not like one of their neighbors being foreclosed on. She not only lost the house, she was only allowed to walk away with two changes of clothes. She lost all the contents as well. The neighbors ended up $300,000 in damages to her, plus $95,000 to pay the guy who paid $5,000 to buy the house back. $400,000 because they foreclosed. What's, you know...
Well, I think that in that particular case, the person you should be asking that question to is the judge who made the judgment, not me.
Why are we not accepting checks?
I don't know the answer to that. I don't know who wrote the check. I don't know when the check was written. I don't know if the check bounced. I don't know.
The check did not bounce.
I don't know that for a fact, and I don't know the details of it. So the answer to your question is if in fact that was the case, that seems to be that they inappropriately dealt with it, if that, in fact, is the case. I don't know the specific facts of that case.
We're getting a lot of people who say that, you know, I wrote the check for the amount I was told that I owed.
Get a receipt.
I took it in. It doesn't matter. There's no law that says you have to accept the check. And a lot of these boards are refusing the checks. Now, you're talking about these poor neighbors who have to foot the bill. Where's the sanity in refusing a perfectly good check?
Well, I don't think there is, but obviously, I don't know if it was a perfectly good check. I don't know if it was paid on time. I don't know if it was the full amount, so I can't answer that for you, Shiv.
Okay, well, I can tell you that I talked to her attorney, and I even talked to her. I interviewed Winona, and I interviewed her attorney on a number of occasions, and I talked to some of her neighbors. They were just very, very upset, and she did drop off the check. The community would, you know.
I would think in a situation like that, that you're right. Somebody would knock on her door. But I also, I've also been told, and this is no different than things you've been told, is she received a number of certified letters that were never opened.
They were sent to her husband, deceased husband, who's never lived there. She bought the house after he died.
If you receive a certified letter at your house, would you open it even if it were?
I don't think it was a certified letter. It was just mail. But
nevertheless, there's facts on both sides of the situation. The reality of the situation is that it should be the last resort. There should be an established collection policy for every association that should be communicated to every single member so they understand what are the steps we're going to take if you fail to pay your assessment. We think most associations, and in fact what I've seen around the country, is most associations take an incremental approach. You don't pay your assessments, you get a notice. You may get a friendly reminder at first, then a little more serious notice. Ultimately, you may get a letter from the board. You may lose privileges. For example, you might lose your parking privileges. You might lose your pool privileges. You might lose other amenity privileges that come with your community. You escalate. What we teach people is you have a policy and you escalate the seriousness of it as the problem grows, and if you ever get to the point of having to consider foreclosure, you take a big deep breath, you step back from it and say, is this what we really want to do in our community? Is it appropriate in these circumstances? What are our other alternatives? And have we made face-to-face contact? Have we done all the things that we've said we would do in our collection policy?
We're talking to Tom Skiba, who's CEO of CAI, and you're on the Commons. What is CAI doing about this? I mean, okay, this is great. Mm-hmm. You come on here and you say this is what should be done, and I've had a lot of CAI attorneys come on and say, well, it should be, you know, the last resort, and we don't really condone this, but, you know, heaven forbid that we're going to even support any kind of legislation that would put any controls over this.
Well, I think we're doing three things. One of which is we're working really hard to expand our education offerings to homeowners and to board members so that they understand the seriousness of this and what they can do to make sure that it is truly a last resort and happens as infrequently as possible.
Define homeowner.
Define a homeowner, anyone resident in a community.
So are you talking to them? I mean, you know.
We are.
before you came on, Tom, CAI had an email list that they shut down. They had a message board that was open to everybody. They didn't like some of the messages, so they shut it down to just the CAI members because apparently it was supposed to be, a benefit for membership. I mean, I don't know why being on a message board is a benefit. But
actually, we closed it down to non-members because of the nature of a lot of messages had become vulgar and abusive. That's why we made that decision. And as a result, people were getting very upset about it, and it was just no longer worth doing if people couldn't behave in a professional and thoughtful manner. And that was an unfortunate decision. But, you know, when I have people, you know, sending each other death threats on message boards that I have some nominal responsibility for, I can't allow that to happen. So let me go back to my point, Chip. Educating homeowners and board members. Board members serve as the board of directors of their community. It's a company. It's a corporation as well as a community. They have to be well-trained. We're working on professional development for all of the other players involved in the process, whether it be the managers, whether it be the attorneys. And we're also actually working on revising our internal policies as it relates to debt collection and foreclosure to see if there are things we can add and recommend to our members to make it a less of a problematic issue. Finally, and the last thing is that we are working with a number of organizations, not only in California but around the country, to craft bills that protect homeowners at the same time they provide adequate protection for the associations. So we want to make sure that everyone's rights are protected here, not just the association, but the individual homeowners who may have run into a problem. We want a bill that's fair. And frankly, the bill that was vetoed in California by Governor Schwarzenegger, rightly in my opinion, was an unfair bill because it created a situation that was going to run the risk of driving a substantial number of associations into bankruptcy in a very short time.
Caller, you're on the air.
Hi, Shu.
Hi.
You're doing a good job with this fellow today. One of the points you made, I think very accurately, was that homeowners associations, just like any type of businesses, have other means to collect debts. And what's going on here really isn't about keeping associations out of bankruptcy. This has been an effort to run up legal bills on behalf of the lawyers. Mm-hmm. And case after case after case, what you find is a very nominal amount of dues that haven't been paid on time and just a massive amount of legal bills. And it is always CAI-affiliated management companies and law firms. Mm-hmm. That you trace these things back. You talked about the Winona Blevins case. That was a CAI management company and a CAI law firm, and you find that in case after case after case. Now, these people give out credentials. I mean, it's alphabet soup of designations around here. When you look at people who are really professionals and not just self-designated professionals, there's a disciplinary system that goes along with any profession. And somebody who violates the ethics of that profession has their credentials pulled. Now, who's had their credentials pulled for some of these outrageous scandals? You've asked again and again and again, what is CAI doing? It seems to me they're not doing anything except waiting for the next check to come in to the association lawyers. And that's what's been going on. And as Lincoln Cummings, one of the founders of CAI, said himself, when it was set up, it had very very noble objectives in mind. What it has become is a trade association. Those aren't my words. Those are Lincoln Cummings' words, one of the founders of CAI. It's become a trade association for the management companies, the law firms, and the service providers, and the homeowners have been sucking hind tits, Shu.
Tom, you want to?
I'm not sure there was a question in there, but I'll see if I can respond to it. I would respectfully disagree with the caller. I think the fact that we spend an enormous amount of time and an enormous amount of money on a wide variety of education programs, he cites our designations and certifications specifically, that's fair. In fact, there is an ethics process, and in fact, if someone has an issue and brings it to our attention and it is a violation of ethics, someone will lose their designations
as
a result.
Has that ever happened?
It has happened, yes. Okay, obviously, for privacy reasons, I'm not going to share who it happened to, but it has happened.
Okay. Well, and it's funny because I got an email mm-hmm. with that question. You know, particularly thinking of attorneys and HOA managers, have you pulled any credentials? Well, I guess you don't.
In the case of managers, yes. Not in the case of attorneys. Yeah, in the case of attorneys, the American Bar Association and their canon of ethics would apply, not CAI's.
Wrong. CAI has its own association called the College of Community Association Lawyers.
I'm aware of that.
Well, what have they done to some of these law firms that are involved in this? How many people have been kicked out of the College of Community Association Lawyers? And why do you always wait for these things to be reported when you know about them? Why doesn't CAI National step in and investigate on its own?
Well, I think the answer to that question is very simple. That's not our job. That's not our mission. And frankly, we don't have the resources to do that. Every state has resources that are in place to do that, whether it's in the case of a criminal allegation, it's the prosecutor or commonwealth attorney.
Who grants the credentials? Is it the state organization or
CAI
National?
No, it is CAI. So if someone files a complaint with us, we will investigate it.
Did you investigate in the Winona Blevins case?
Did I have a complaint? No, I did not.
Oh, so it just makes national news, but that's not enough to be a complaint in your mind.
No, someone actually has to cite a specific failure of someone, just as an attorney.
Okay, Sue, you and I will make a complaint about Winona Blevins and ask him to look into it. How about that? It's okay. The Chaparral Management Company.
If you can provide the details, we will investigate
it. We'll send you the press clippings. How's that?
That's not sufficient.
We'll get you the details. So we're going to take a short break. Thank you very much for calling in, and we'll take your calls when we come back during the second half. Don't go away because there's going to be lots more with Tom Skiba right here on the Commons.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.
WBR Fairfax Radio, you're on the Commons. I'm Sue Bartholomew, and sitting across the board from me is Tom Skiba, who is the CEO of CAI, and that's a bit of a tongue twister. And I was always afraid that I would do something silly about that, but no. I appreciate you coming in. Thank you, Tom. We've been talking about foreclosures, and we've been having a very lively discussion. And during the second half, I'm going to open up the phone line. So if you'd like to call in, feel free to do so. Our number here in the studio is 703-560-TALK, 703-560-8255. And we'll let you talk to Tom. Tom, going back to foreclosures, mm-hmm. you're talking about, I asked you a number of times what CAI is doing, and what you said was, well, we're working, we've got ECHO, and we've mm-hmm. got, CAI LAC and all of these people out there in California who are going to be working on proposed legislation. Is that just in California?
Well, right now it's certainly the most immediate area that we're looking at because we had the governor veto a bill this year. And we've committed to the governor in part of those discussions to participate in crafting a bill that provides higher levels of consumer protection but still provides reasonable processes. So it's probably on the front burner more in California than anywhere else, but it's true in other states as well. We've been through a number of situations. In Arizona last year, the legislature proposed a bill
mm-hmm.
that would prevent a association for foreclosing for 7 years once a lien had been filed.
Mm-hmm.
We had some real problems with that. More importantly...
So did I, because I don't think they should foreclose at
well,
all.
Well, perhaps. But more importantly, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac had serious problems with that because they felt that law, in fact, violated their lending guidelines.
Oh, come on. You're going to lend $500,000 to someone who's going to foreclose for $1.50 in interest, and you're going to have heartburn.
I'm just telling you, I didn't write their letter.
That doesn't even make any sense, Tom.
Sure it does.
No, it doesn't. Absolutely not. I want to see that in writing on Friday.
We can send you a copy of the letter.
Would you? Okay. Sure. You talked about Arizona. Mm-hmm. You fought Arizona. I had Senator Julio Urbina on from Florida, who said mm-hmm. that CAI dumped $1 million to defeat his bills in Florida.
Boy, Shu, I wish that were the case. I wish I had $1 million to dump anywhere. That's simply not true.
Are you calling the senator a liar?
No, I just think he perhaps has his figures and his associations mistaken.
You know, you've got your bucket-door campaigns all over the country.
We have a total budget for legislative action around the country that doesn't even come close to that nationwide.
What about local CAI chapters in Florida?
Mm-hmm.
Could they have come up with that kind of money?
Not as a chapter. I know they couldn't have come up with that money. If their members chose to do that on their own, that's a different story. But I'm not aware of any of them, one of our members, that are quite that generous, because, frankly, I'd be looking for them for contributions in other areas. The reality is that the organization doesn't have those kinds of resources. Our entire organization doesn't have those kinds of resources, much less a single chapter or a single state. It just doesn't exist.
Right.
And I know folks that, I heard this in California recently. You know, CAI came in and spent $10 million to get the governor to do X. Well, you know, that's just simply not the case. We presented a number of facts, and we felt were compelling, and he chose to agree with us, whether it was simply our facts or facts from others, because I know he got letters from other people on this issue. He made a choice. That's his choice. We're committed to responding to that, to the challenge he put in his veto message to the legislature, to do whatever we can to help find a solution that seems to work for everybody.
You said earlier that you were going to include homeowners, you're going to talk to homeowners. Now you're getting in there and you're working with legislators and you're coming up with proposed legislation in California. How many of the actual California homeowners have you talked to? Real homeowners. I'm not talking about board members.
I can't answer that right now. This whole process, well, a number of them. Some of them who are actually actively involved in our chapters, who are either board members or just individual homeowners in their associations. But we're actually trying to reach out and bring in, and that's one of the reasons we've tried to involve ECHO in this, because they have a bigger homeowner in the northern part of the state, a bigger homeowner presence as well. So not all of those folks are going to come from CAI. Some will. We're going to try to reach out to as many organizations, the California Association of Seniors, AARP, and a variety of others, and encourage them to be part of this process as well.
What was the California Association of Seniors that proposed this bill in the first place?
I agree.
So you worked really hard to defeat them, and now
we worked hard to defeat not them, but this specific bill, because we felt this bill had flaws. We'd like to find a bill that all the parties and all the folks who have an interest in this industry in California can work with and can live with, and we'd like them to be part of the solution, too. They may choose not to. That's their choice.
Are you going to do anything in Virginia?
Right now, we don't have anything pending in Virginia at the moment, but certainly if the issue arises and...
I want you to keep me in mind.
Okay. Well, I appreciate that.
Because if you do, and I'm not coming at it from mm-hmm. CAI's point of view, I'm coming at it from, this is an outrage and we don't need it at all. Tom, we've opened up the phone line, so if anybody would like to call, you may. We don't usually open it up because I usually have someone on my one and only line here. Which makes it a little difficult, but people can send in questions and mm-hmm. emails, and I guess this one kind of is on point. Why is CAI still working with the false pretense of representing the interests of the homeowners? Everybody knows by now that CAI is plainly a trade organization protecting the wallets of their attorneys and industry members, definitely not the welfare of the homeowners. When will the CAI finally start telling the truth?
Well, I can't respond to that because I think we do tell the truth. I think the fundamental truth of it is, in fact, that by building strong, effective, harmonious communities, every single homeowner benefits. Every single member of the community gets value out of their living arrangement. And if we can make board smarter, if we can make homeowners more aware, if we can make associations run better, and that's really what we do with our training, then every single homeowner benefits from that community.
But the training is directed more towards the board members.
The training includes training for board members, but it also includes training and materials for individual homeowners who are living in a community association, making it, educating them on what their roles are, what their rights are, what their expectations are. I mean, the hardest job, Shu, for a board member, and you've been a board member, so you know this.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. The single hardest job a board member faces is, how do you balance the interests of the individual homeowner with the interests of the community at large? And there's always friction at that point. There's no question about it. And that's the hardest thing a board does, and it's the hardest thing for them to get their arms wrapped around. Finding ways to increase communication, finding ways to make people more aware. You know, how many times do I get emails and calls saying, well, I didn't even know there was a rule about this? Happens all the time.
Oh, I know.
In Virginia, we even have a very, very strong positive disclosure requirement on home sales. You actually have several days after you sign a contract pre-sale to review the documents, the CC&Rs, that by law you're supposed to be given ahead of time. And you can choose to, 72 hours. You can choose to void the contract.
72 hours. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they don't get them.
Well, and they should. And if they don't, it's supposed to be extended.
Sometimes then you get to the settlement table, the attorney covers for you. I mean, my daughter bought.
But there are states that my point was is there are states that don't even have that level of disclosure rule. And I think that's a real problem. And we've tried to get disclosure laws passed in a number of states, unsuccessfully, I might add.
Well, I think that when the disclosure rules came out back in 1989 here in Virginia, I think, I thought it was a great idea. Hey, wonderful. We now, anybody reading this stuff is mm-hmm. going to say, I'm really not all that interested. And
I don't think it's a question of being interested. It's a question of being educated. The old Sims clothing store motto, an educated consumer is our best customer, leaps to mind.
Yeah, I had a twist on that one.
Associations aren't for everybody. There's no doubt about that. There are some people who just not the right kind of living arrangement. That's okay.
You're on the air, caller.
Hi, I'm actually one of the people that I guess is for community associations.
Okay.
I guess people who aren't have never had the nightmare neighbor who has no respect or regard for your property value as your next door neighbor. And the management company in my homeowners association was fabulous, and they truly helped out because the guy was in direct violation of all the rules. And I mean, he, like you were mentioning a moment ago, didn't take the time to read the rules. But I personally feel, more secure with my property values knowing that they have these ordinances in place, these bylaws, they call them.
The bylaws. Tell me what was it your neighbor was doing that was so offensive?
Oh, it was rusted out trucks in the yards, never on the driveway, and he put up a flag, and it was a Confederate flag, and I mean, it was just a whole slew of things, and they were constantly disrupting the neighborhood in the middle of the night, and it was just...
Did you ever think of calling the police if they were disrupting the neighborhood in the middle of the night?
Oh, yes, I absolutely did that, but it also helped, not only police, and on numerous occasions they they got themselves arrested, but it also helped to back it up with a letter from the Homeowners Association and see if you can't, I guess what that did was, maybe put some kind of, shame or some awareness to him that he was really bugging us, bugging everybody around him.
Well, I think that you're going to run into people like that all the time. Would you have, let me ask you something, caller, would you have liked to have had his house foreclosed on?
No, but I think I know that we actually had that, and I don't actually know where the house is, but I mean, the person hadn't paid their dues in years and years, and I think at that point, absolutely, I mean, when the rest of us are footing the bill for the beautiful landscaping and the snow plows, and one person isn't paying anything, I think, yeah, obviously, as a group, we all have to pitch in. If he didn't and they couldn't get the funds back, then I think that, yeah, that's a way to get the money back.
Did you go to court?
I have no clue. I know that I read it in the newsletter that they were going to put a lien on the house, I think.
Okay. Did they ask you if you wanted to go that route as a member of the association?
I don't know. I'm sure it was discussed at one of their meetings, but, you know, I'm guilty of not going to meetings unless I had a problem, an issue myself.
And Tom's sitting here across the board from me laughing. Go ahead, Tom, jump in.
Well, it's nice to know there's somebody out here who actually gets what I'm saying, so the caller, thank you. I appreciate that. As I said before we went to the call, homeowners associations, condos are not for everybody. There's no question about that. For some folks who are looking for this kind of living arrangement, it makes perfect sense. For others, it doesn't, particularly if you want to keep yard cars.
I don't want to keep yard cars, but I don't necessarily want my neighbors.
So I think I think the issue here is there's got to be choices, okay? There's got to be mechanisms
in place. I agree with you. You've got to have choices.
And that's really what it's all about. There's room in our communities, whether it's a condo or a homeowners association or a non-community interest development environment, for all different kinds of housing models, for all different kinds of people. And that's really what we have to make sure, that we have strong and vibrant communities, whether inside associations or not, because that benefits the area we live. It benefits us, you and I, here in Northern Virginia. And I don't know where the caller was from, but it benefits them in their community. So it's all about working well with people, and it's all about communicating with people.
Thank you for calling, caller. I think they hung up. Okay. We're going to go off. I'm going to try to get to some of these emails if I possibly can. Some of them we've already talked about, so I won't go in there. Now we're going to go far away from foreclosures, and got one here for you. Hello, Mr. Skiba. Why are you trying to block all types of outdoor antennas, including even the most unobtrusive and invisible ones? These antenna bans are having a very negative impact on amateur radio public service efforts and shortwave listening.
We're not actually trying to ban radio antennas or any other kind of antenna. The Federal Communications Commission controls most of the law on and regulation on antennas. We do have, in many associations, restrictions on construction. For example, can I build a 60-foot aerial in my backyard in a townhouse community? In many cases, that's not permitted because it's a construction issue, not a radio frequency or antenna issue. In most of the issues that we see related to antennas is typically satellite dish for DirecTV and things like that, and that is an FCC-mandated set of rules. And, in fact, an association can't forbid them. All it can do is have some requirements on placement and the ability to kind of make them as unobtrusive as possible.
Tom, I think this guy is talking about, the person who wrote this is talking about ham radio.
Okay.
And I think that there was a bill that was proposed this year, and I think CAI did, in fact, oppose it.
You know, in what state?
I think it was a federal bill. I think it was.
I don't recall seeing one, so I'm not sure.
And I think CAI actually put something out in one of your newsletters and said, hey, we're opposing this. We don't want antennas. These people have been calling me for a long time and saying, I am a ham radio operator, and I kind of blew them off because with, elderly people losing their homes, and I've got a whole list of them, some you've heard of and some you haven't, and I don't know we'll get to them. But I kind of blew them off. It really hit home, I guess, on 911 when the phone lines were out, cell phones didn't work, people were stuck, they couldn't get home. Kids whose parents, and I have a lot of friends who were in the Pentagon at the time when the Pentagon was hit, and they couldn't let their kids and their families know that they were okay. And the only thing that was working was an antenna, except that 90% of all housing in Fairfax County is in a mandatory membership association. And, of course, ham radio operators and antennas are not allowed there. And that's when
I'm not that familiar with this issue. I know it's come up a couple of times in the past, but it's come up in the context of construction rules or sort of expansion rules in associations where I've been aware of it. So if there was if our legislative folks were looking at a federal rule, I'm just not aware of it.
Actually, it's funny, and I've got to tell you this, because I went to a meeting and some guy was talking about not being able to park in garages when he went to anywhere where you have a garage, and having to find an outdoor parking spot because of the antenna on his van. And
that's a big antenna.
It is a big antenna. It is a big antenna. But the thing was, I mean, it was over 8 feet or whatever, but when he was parked next to me, and when I saw it, I said, "What on earth is that?" He says, "That's my antenna." I said, "What kind of antenna?" "It's a ham."
I say, he couldn't park in my garage at my office either because it's about 6 feet tall.
Yeah. So he had a hard time doing that. Mm-hmm. But I mean, so I said, "Oh, you must live in a homeowners association." And, you know, you say homeowners association to total strangers out there, and they pull these faces except for the young lady who called. So he stuck it on his van. And,
interesting. I don't even know if I'd recognize one if it drove past me to know what it is.
They're not that horrible.
It was just tall.
It was just tall. I mean, it was not much taller than a tall car antenna.
Really?
But yet, you know, there's this control freaky thing that goes.
Well, I can tell you, my only experience has been I actually had a neighbor growing up who was a ham radio operator, and he had a 40-foot antenna in his back of his yard. So I don't even know what are we talking about, something that's big or small or whatever? I just don't have the information.
I think that with technology, they've gotten smaller and smaller, but, of course, the rules say that you cannot have an antenna, you cannot have an antenna, and that's all there is to it. I've had a lot of comments on people's thoughts about foreclosures from people who wrote in and said, you know, don't think associations should have the power to foreclose. And so that's why I'm kind of curious as to whether you're actually going to talk to the people.
Well, we're going to make every effort to do that. And it's not just, you know, the broad generic people. I think there are a lot of organizations who have
I'm talking about the people who have to live in.
No, I understand. But I mean,
because, it's the people who are going to lose their houses.
Mm-hmm. And I absolutely agree with you. And I think that reaching out to all the diversion groups, whether it's the seniors and or it's the ECHO in California or it's other organizations, is key to coming up with a solution that provides appropriate due process and protections and still allows an association to be run in a financially thoughtful and solvent and reasonable way. That's really the obligation of as a board member. I actually know of occasions around the country where board members have been sued by the members of their association for failing to collect bills and for allowing people to defer payments because the claim has been, much as it has been with boards in the publicly traded company area, that they weren't adequately protecting the fiduciary interests of the association as an organization. It's a tough place to put a volunteer board member. This is somebody who's not getting paid. This is somebody who's doing it for their own their sense of community.
As I said, actually, I don't think it's the board members who are making the decisions to foreclose. I think it's once it gets to the foreclosure agency, the attorney, or in California, I guess you have these mom and pop.
But the board has to sign off on it, Jew. The board, in every state that I'm aware of that permits this, the board still has
they
to sign off on. You can't
defer
it to the final decision should be made by the board. And if it's not, then that's something that we should work on educating people and training them and fixing, saying you as a board member have an obligation here that
but
why actions.
Don't you how about the attorneys? You know, you as an attorney.
Well, I agree.
I still think that we can. I mean, I've got a whole list of people here. Robert Nelms, who shot himself over completely. And the thing was, it was fines. $503 worth of fines. $3,000 worth of...
Well, I'm not going to comment on his motivations, but...
He was depressed. He didn't want the publicity. He didn't want the whole world to know about it. He was embarrassed and ashamed, and he lost his house. It was, Tom, it's always the houses that have got a lot of equity in them. And it's always the people who are least able to defend themselves,
that's why the choice to foreclose should always be the last resort. It should be a very carefully thought out decision. It should be only in the most extreme set of circumstances. And you know what? I will admit, Jew, that with 50 million people living in associations, people make mistakes. And sometimes the homeowners make mistakes by not paying their bills as you advocate correctly, and sometimes a board makes a mistake. There's no question about that. The way to fix that isn't to say you can't do A, B, or C. The way to fix it is to educate people, to make them aware of what their responsibilities are, what their rights are, and make sure that if this does happen and it's necessary, it does so very infrequently and only when all the I's have been dotted and all the T's have been crossed and everyone understands the implications and the circumstances. So if a board is turning something over to an attorney and sort of washing their hands of it and saying, you collect this bill and the attorney's making the ultimate decision, I think that's wrong. I think the board needs to be involved in that process. It's their decision. They're the board of trustees. The attorney's an employee.
Tom, thank you so much for joining me on the comments today. I hope that when CAI puts together something that would sort of provide for, or CAI's notion of what would provide for some protections to the homeowners, that you will come back and share it with us.
I'm happy to do that. And thank you for having me.
Thanks to all of you for joining us right here on The Commons. The Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions. Stay tuned, stay free, and we'll see you all next week. Thanks again.